Hi, guys, and welcome to another episode of the Meatgistics podcast. With me today is not Austin, because we were getting tired of just me and him, so we got him out of here. I've got Kurt Ratzliff with us. Kurt and I just got back from doing some awesome shooting at Flint Oaks. That course is absolutely gorgeous.
It is great. I think I changed what you said, though. We didn't shoot awesomely. It was an awesome place to shoot. I don't know that the shooting was awesome.
The experience was awesome.
The shoot was subpar.
Now, the first year I got invited to that with Walton's, as I was leaving, I caught Brett. And I'm like, now that I've gotten an invite, you can't uninvite me. I'm in on this. And luckily, I've gone every year. And it really is my favorite outdoor mentor, Pheasants Forever, any of those event every year. It's just a beautiful place.
It is.
And it's so much fun.
It is. It's a lot of fun. That's the first time I've shot sporting clays there. I had actually been out there on some bird hunts before, but that was the first time on the sporting clays course for me. But it was a lot of fun.
When you go out there and just hunt, do you bring your dog or are they?
No, they supply them. Okay. I mean, I suppose technically you could bring your dogs if you wanted to, but it's a different atmosphere, different setup than if you go out and hunt like some fields or something. It's just a different deal. So it's best to use their dogs probably. And they've got great dogs.
Oh,
so it all goes together very well.
Yeah. I'd be amazed if they didn't. Did you happen to see when you were leaving all the puppies?
I did not.
Oh, they had a bay door open and there were looked like 11 or 12 little lab puppies just running around. And I'd be lying if I said I didn't think about stopping, going, stealing one real quick, because they are absolutely adorable. And for some reason, I have the worst puppy fever I've ever. Every puppy I see, I'm like, oh, we need a dog. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. But, well, lab puppies are cute. I mean, I'm not a lab guy.
Right.
But lab puppies are just cute. They just are.
I had one black lab mix, and she was such a bad dog. Like, I loved her. She loved me. She loved everybody. But she was just a bad dog that I'm a little burnt out on labs.
Yeah.
I don't know. Actually, I don't do a lot of bird hunting. If I do get into it, I maybe would look into a bird dog. But I like big, beefy, chase a bear down dogs.
Those are my type of dogs. That's not what you need for birds.
No.
Not what you need at all. Wow.
My dog, Riggins, the smaller one, would love to bird hunt. I mean, he chases anything he sees, a bunny, a squirrel, he goes nuts. But he would destroy it in bringing it back to you.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a soft mouth with that dog.
Yeah.
Absolutely insane.
That'll happen.
But one of the things, we were invited out there through Outdoor Mentors. For those of you who don't know, Outdoor Mentors is an organization that gets young kids who typically would not have access to the outdoors out on hunts. It gets them involved with like a mentor, a hunting mentor, a life mentor. It is one of the easiest partners to push.
Yeah, for sure.
They're creating future hunters. If they weren't doing this, we would continue to see hunting nosedive. They're kind of boots on the ground in getting young hunters more involved. But so we went out there. We had a comedian the night before. It was great. They had plenty of prizes. And I won a blue bucket item for the first time. So the way they do these raffles is you get a few blue tickets and you can put those into the blue bucket items. Then red, you get more. And it's not quite as nice, but still nice. And then white is just like the meh stuff.
Which is what I win.
However, I really wanted that K-bar knife.
That was a big knife.
It was gorgeous. No, not the big Jim Bowie. It's the K-bar.
Okay. All right. Yes, I'm with you.
That was a really nice knife.
Yeah.
And by the time they call my number, that was long gone. I did, however, get a pistol chamber cleaning rope.
Oh, those are nice.
Yeah. That was the easy. Like, I went home and did it right away. I'm like, why would anyone do this any other way?
Yep.
This
is those are
super
nice,
simple,
easy, quick, do a good job. Absolutely.
I was floored by that. But my big win was a 3-pack of really nice whiskey bottles. This is the one that everyone seemed the most excited about. I had one old guy come over and talk to me about this for like 10 minutes. He was obviously wanting me to open it right then so he could have another sip. I wasn't going to do that.
Nice try, though.
Yeah, right. But I thought it would be a fun thing for you and I to sit down and have a sip of this.
And like, I'm going to refuse that?
I didn't think you would. And we were, just before this podcast started, we were sampling, taste testing, I guess.
Yep.
A couple of different backstraps with different seasonings. Just on the off chance that we decide to do something.
Yeah, there might be something in the works.
There might be something in the works, but that's for another time.
Right.
For now, we're going to talk about this. This is Elijah Craig Barrel Proof Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. So the barrel proof is 123.6 proof, making it 61% alcohol.
You guys were arguing about the percentage of beers.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, come on.
Those are right out the door. They hardly matter. With this barrel proof, each one is hand labeled and has a batch assigned. There are 200 barrels, I think, is what they cap it at. And this one is A121. The Elijah Craig, I did some reading on him. He was a reverend who was big in kind of getting whiskey bourbon going in America. He, I believe, was the first person to put them into burnt barrels.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
I think I remember reading that.
Obviously, that's a huge watershed moment in whiskey. But without any further ado, I want to get into this.
Let's do this. So, yeah, while you're open that, I know Elijah Craig has some other proofs of products that they have. And
got it.
There we go. And like, I like the Elijah Craig small batch is really, really good. That's one that I buy fairly regularly. I can't remember the proof on it, though. It's, I want to say 80 something, maybe. But it's really good. Yeah, how's this?
So that certainly does not smell like 61.
No, it smells real good.
Alcohol. What was that? What's the Bacardi that's like 190?
Yeah, something 121 like that? Or 121. Something. 121. Like
yeah, that smells way stronger than this.
Not that I ever would have consumed.
No.
I wouldn't know anything about that, but I'm willing to try something this strong.
So we have a post on Meatgistics that's a drink of choice. So as soon as I won this, I collected all my winnings, took a picture of it, and posted it to that, hoping to make some people jealous, but mostly people were just happy for me. So that kind of ruined it. I wanted some.
You wanted jealousy, anger.
Exactly.
Yeah, all the good stuff. All right. Well, here we go.
I mean, that is
really good.
Incredible.
I'm not the guy that's going to go, oh, I taste the cherry and the vanilla. I'm not that guy with all the different flavors. I can't do that.
Yeah.
But I can say, like, I like to drink bourbon. I like to drink whiskey. And, that's really good. I mean, it's got some burn, no doubt.
But it's not an obnoxious burn.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So,
that's good.
We started talking about this on Meatgistics, and people were saying different bourbons, different whiskeys. Weller's was one that kept getting brought up. So we tried some of that. I really did enjoy that. Then last year we went up to Pheasant Fest.
Yep.
And Brett bought everybody at the table a chance to win something. And it was either everyone was going to win a shotgun. And the second prize was everyone would win a bottle of bourbon or whiskey. And our table was lucky enough to win that. So I took home a bottle of Bullet. And between that and one of the bottles of Weller's, I started to appreciate more whiskeys, bourbons. But this is on a whole nother level from that.
It is. It is. It is. It's really strong. There's no doubt about that. But and if you're familiar with the Elijah Craig small batch, it does taste very similar to that. It's pretty reminiscent of that, really, but it's just like a lot of punch to it.
Yeah. You feel it in your mouth. It immediately starts spreading. It's a burn, but it's not. I don't know how to explain it. You don't have the vocabulary.
Well, you were talking about the rum that's so strong.
That, 151.
That's what it is. There we go. And that.
Terrible.
That's not even fun to drink. I don't like that at all. This, yeah, for sure. I could sit and drink this. like one of the things that I, one of the things that I like a lot is the bottled and bond bourbons, and they're 100 proof.
Okay.
And one of the things that I like about them is like you could, cause you can take a strong bourbon like this, put an ice cube in it. And usually like as the ice melts, it starts to get even more flavor, mm-hmm. has more of a larger flavor profile or whatever they want to say. You can taste more things. And so it'd be interesting to put some ice in this as well, but I kind of want to enjoy it like this for a little bit here.
So that, yeah, that's what I wanted to do first. Cause I mean, I don't regularly drink straight bourbon whiskey of this caliber. So one of the things I did read, they said at least give it a shot without any water or ice.
And this you can drink straight up just like this.
Yeah.
Just, this is super nice.
My brother-in-law back in New York owns a liquor store. So he started getting me on to like some of the honey whiskeys. Mm-hmm. And those are really good. But with those, I definitely preferred it once the ice started melting to cut it a little bit. I don't know that this needs that.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really, really good. There's no question. And I'm not as much of a honey flavored person. I think we were talking earlier. My palate goes away from sweet stuff a lot of times. And so I'm not too excited about drinking those anymore. Yeah. but this is, yeah, this is super nice, but I'm not a flavored whiskey guy. This is really good.
Yeah. It's just, there's a,
I gotta slow down in fact, cause it is pretty strong.
Yeah. You do have to remember that.
That's
I was
right.
Already planning on pouring more in, and each one of these is a couple of drinks probably.
What do you think? Or is it just one?
It's just one.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just one.
We'll see how red I am by the end of this. Something about this room just turns me red. And then you add liquor to it and I'm going to be a tomato by the end of this.
Well, it'll be fun to watch.
And it's not just the video editing or anything, because Austin will be in here and he'll be pasty white as always. And I look red as a tomato. So there's a... God, there's a... Definitely an alcohol note to the smell, for sure.
Oh, for sure.
But even when you taste, like when you sip it, that doesn't go away, but it mellows.
It's really good. Have you ever been to any of the distilleries down in Kentucky or Tennessee or any of that kind of stuff? I've been to the Jim Beam distillery. I went there one time. I took my kids, sorry. But, and this, just the aroma of that place is like, it's like etched in my mind. It was just like such a wonderful smell. It just around the whole warehouse. I mean, the whole grounds, you could smell it. And it was just really good. I just really, really liked it.
You could smell the alcohol or you could smell what?
No.
Okay.
You could smell, I don't know. I don't remember enough of it to remember what exactly it was that you were smelling. But the aroma is like, you can smell, like I go back there when I smell this.
Mm-hmm.
This is not, you know, this is not what they were making there, but...
So
but
one
it's
of,
like it's you can still smell it there, whatever it is.
It's got to have something to do with that wood being charred and then soaked with liquor. I mean, I have to imagine that plays a huge part in it. For a while there, it seems to have tapered off a little bit, but they were getting real good with porters. They were reversing it. They were aging porters in charred, so whiskey barrels. And I loved that.
Yeah.
I thought it was absolutely delicious. Was it you and I who were talking about the fact, lamenting?
It's already kicking in.
Lamenting the fact that there just aren't as many good porters out anymore?
I don't think it was me.
Okay.
Although I agree with that.
It's just, they seem to have disappeared.
Yep.
The only things I find anymore are vanilla porters, which I don't particularly care for. They're okay sometimes. And now the oatmeal stouts, really. It's not a porter. Vanilla porters everywhere you go, and I'm just not a big fan of that. I am definitely more of a porter and stout type of person. In the summer, I drink basically sours.
Yeah, can't go wrong with a sour. Oh, you can. I've had some bad sours, but for the most part, yeah, summertime and they're sours, excellent. It's perfect combination.
Yep.
This absolutely.
Is perfect hot weather. Mowing your lawn. Awesome. Awesome drink. But the other two bottles I won were the Rabbit Hole Special Edition and Old Forester Prohibition.
That one I've had before. The Rabbit Hole, I wasn't even familiar with that one at all. But the Old Forester Prohibition one, I've had that before. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I like that one a lot too. I don't think it's
quite this level.
I don't think it's this strong as far as the alcohol content. I don't think it is. But I like Old Forester. Most of their line is pretty good.
Okay. Cool.
Kind of like most of Elijah Craig is pretty good as well. It's a good one.
I have to be honest. When I would see this at the store all the time, and something about I'm going to try and move this without making any noise. Something about the font they use for that reminds me of my mom used to read romance novels, and it reminds me of that for some reason. I don't know why.
I didn't know where you were going with that, but you said that. I was like, yes, you're exactly correct. Yes, like Harlequin, some kind of old Harlequin book or something. That's funny.
I don't know what it is, but
that is right. Does. Oh, man, that's funny. But yeah, is really good. This is really good. See, I've been on a big Bottled in Bond kick for a while now on bourbons, and they're all 100 proof. It's getting me already. I really like those. They're very consistently good. It's like if you get that, it's probably going to be pretty good almost regardless of the brand. Almost. There's a few of the low-end stuff that are not very good. But for the most part, you get a Bottled in Bond bottle of whiskey, it's probably going to be pretty good.
Do you know where they're from?
Bottled in Bond is like a set of rules that came into existence. So a lot of brands have a line that's Bottled in Bond, and it has to be, and I don't remember all of the things that it has to be. It has to be aged 4 years. I remember that. It has to be 100 proof. And there's something about it has to be from like one distillery and one distiller oversaw the whole process or something like that.
Okay.
And I'm probably not saying that exactly right, but it's something along those lines. And it's just, and it came into existence to make, it was a government regulation because, you know, you can screw up alcohol and make it bad for you.
Sure, sure.
And so that was like when there was some of that going on, that was a government regulation that came out. And if you met all of their requirements, you could put Bottled in Bond on there, and then you knew you were buying a safe bottle of whiskey.
Well, the nice thing is though, I mean, government regulations have never screwed anything up. So no, obviously never. It's been
maybe they got bourbon right though. I don't know.
I'm sure it sounds like they did. But that makes sense. So like when you think of a bonded truck.
Correct.
Same kind of deal. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. And so it's just called Bottled in Bond. And so if you look, you find that on the label, it'll be 4 years old. You know that. And that makes a big difference.
Is this 12?
12 years old.
Yeah.
Nice.
12 years old. When we were looking at all the prizes at the Outdoor Mentors raffle, did you happen to look at the custom-made fishing pole?
I did.
Oh, that's right.
Well, I know the guy that makes those.
Yeah, we'll pretend like we didn't talk about this before.
Okay, we didn't.
I ended up talking to him because I went up and looked at this fishing pole. First of all, it was absolutely gorgeous. I mean, that guy is obviously an artist.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But one of the things I noticed was the eyelets. Not only do they not match up, they actually spiral all the way around the pole. So I couldn't figure that out. And I asked a couple of people and nobody knew what it was. Everybody looked at it curiously. But the guy who made it was there, who you know, you can tell that in a second.
Yep.
But what he told me is it's designed so you can use a bait caster, but get the benefits of an open reel spinning rod. So it starts with the eyelet on the top like you would with a bait caster, but it spins around as it goes up the pole so that the last eyelet is faced straight down. So you get that extra oomph when you set. And I just thought that was the smartest thing ever. And I asked them, I'm like, that's genius. You know, have you patented this? And he kind of laughed. He's like, no, this is something very old. It's like, this is what they used to do when all fishing poles were custom handmade. So I asked him, I'm like, all right, I put in for that. I badly want to win it. but you know, how can I get in touch with you to buy one? If not, and they said, well, I have one out in my car. And I started getting a bad feeling in my stomach. I'm like, all right, but how much would that poll be? And I mean, it was fairly reasonable. I don't want to you know, put his pricing out there. It was fairly reasonable, but more than I wanted to spend on a bass pole.
Sure.
But I will do my best to, because I have his information, I will put his contact information in the post below this so that people can contact him if you want to.
Yeah, and he's a great guy. His name is Neil Hall. His business that he has is called Classic Destiny. And he builds fly fishing rods. He builds fishing poles, you know, whatever, anything like that, he can build it. And the thing that's kind of cool about Neil and his background is he's an engineer by trade. Back when he was in the working world and all that kind of stuff, he was an engineer. And so he understands like how to break things down and like where to place the eyelets that are on the rod. He's checks each one of those rods out by hand and decides where to put those.
Yeah.
It's not just a set formula like you would get from a factory.
Yep.
And so like I had Neil build a fly rod for my wife. She got into fly fishing real heavy and was enjoying it. And I wanted to continue that process. So bought her one and he just made it just, I mean, it really is a work of art.
How long?
It's a four weight. And I can't remember whether it's 8.5 or 9 foot long. I can't remember.
How tall is your wife?
5'7".
Okay.
It's super easy casting. I mean, he did a great job with it. He took it around for a long time to shows when he was going to a show to have his stuff.
That specific one?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It turned out super nice.
Cool.
I mean, it was really, really nice. And luckily then my wife returned the favor for me, a few years later. So I've got a custom fly rod as well. That's a 6 weight, 9 foot, but it's made for like big Western rivers and stuff like that for big trout and that
awesome.
Kind of thing. So it's really fun. I love that one.
It's always a good idea if you can get your wife or husband in on something like a hobby together.
Absolutely.
Does so many things for you. One, it gives you like another thing you can actually do together. Two, it kind of, the other person understands the finances behind it. Like, yeah, this is what it costs.
Yep.
Like if Lisa knew what I spent on some of the things, she would not be happy. But like if she understood like, well, this is why it costs that much, it would be an easier sell.
It does help, that's for sure. It
definitely does.
Definitely. I'm does. Mr. Romance, you know, so I bought my wife a shotgun for an anniversary one time. But it worked. I mean, it was a cool deal. She loved it. She was very excited by it. And it actually meant some stuff between the two of us. And so you have that as well.
I bought my wife, she just finished her executive MBA program at WSU. I bought her a power rack. Like a,
right.
You have to like know what your spouse wants and that's tailor right. it to that. Like, buy her pearl earrings or something? She doesn't want
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
She wants something that she can use and enjoy. Yeah. So I feel like too often we get caught up in these, you know, jewelry for women, ties or whatever for men. And that's not what
no.
is really going to help out.
No.
Your wife, though, you bought her a shotgun, and from talking to you in the past, like she goes with you quite often.
Oh yeah,
so she's a big outdoors.
Just about everything that I backpack and hunt and hike and you know hunt birds and hunt big game and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, she's pretty much with me the whole way. Like it's kind of a thing this summer. I'm going to go on a backpacking trip by myself without her.
Oh, wow.
And it's a big thing, you know? and so, yeah, she's pretty much always there with me.
Where are you going?
Someplace in Colorado. Oh. I've got, two mountains that I want to climb. Cause they just make me mad that I haven't got those two knocked off yet. No, they're nothing special.
Right.
They're nothing spectacular. I just should have climbed them by now. And so I'm going to go do that, hopefully knock that out the first day. And then I really haven't decided where I'm going elk hunting yet this year, but I'll probably go spend whatever time I have left, 5 or 6 days bumming around out in the woods someplace, seeing if I can find some elk.
Are you going solo?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, hunting solo or
no? Just
backpacking. Yeah, backpacking. I'm just going to go by myself. I grew up doing that, though. When I was a teenager, I went I solo backpacked all the time. Not that I was good at it. It was just that I didn't know any better. Nobody wanted to go with me.
I guess you can be bad at backpacking by yourself. Oh, yeah. I guess you can be.
Yeah.
I was going to say you can't be, but yeah, you can be.
Yeah,
you can be unprepared, let's say.
Yes. Yeah.
Who are you going hunting with?
My wife. Probably Mega.
Okay, so she's going to meet you out there?
Oh, no. The scouting thing will be in July. Hunting season's not till October.
In July. Okay.
Yeah. So you got to see if you can find some elk, then try to figure, understand that you're there in July. They're not going to be, most likely, they're not going to be where they were at in July when you're out there in October looking for them, but kind of figure that part out. So we'll see. We'll see. But I haven't been out on a solo backpacking trip since I was a teenager. So this will be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Colorado's... I know that their Department of Wildlife is still trying to insist that there aren't any grizzlies in Colorado, and that's been proven false.
Yep. And there, for a long time, there was no wolves.
Yeah, there's wolves.
There are now wolves. Yeah.
So but the big one, I mean, grizzly obviously is the big fear anywhere out there. I think for anybody.
Well, I mean, rightfully so.
Right. Well, God, they're... what was it? Do you know who Adam Greentree is?
No.
So he's a hunter from Australia, and he comes over here. I actually think it was him who released the video proving that there are grizzlies in Colorado again.
Okay.
But he says, he's like, why are we so obsessed with these monster movies and whatever? He goes, monsters are real.
For
and
sure.
They're grizzly bears.
Yes.
He's like, it's not their fault, they're monsters. For anyone, it's a terrible movie, but it was a really fun watch on Netflix, Into the Grizzly Maze.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, it was released in the last like year, if that. It's got a bunch of people you'll recognize, and even some of them you'll know their names. Billy Bob Thornton, Thomas Jane, Piper Perabo, and Patrick, who's Cyclops?
James Marsden
or something. So like a bunch of really well-known actors and actresses, all about this place called the Grizzly Maze in Alaska, and they get hunted by a grizzly. It is just absolutely terribly great. Highly, highly recommend. A lot of fun.
I understand terribly great.
Yes. Oh, God, I love those types of movies. But in Colorado, I mean, what is there? Maybe a couple. My big concern the times I've gone hunting up there is mountain lions.
Oh,
because they're definitely there.
Oh, for sure. There, yeah, there's no question about that. Oh, yeah, we'll be having a little bit more of that. But yeah, for sure. And I've seen a couple of mountain lions when we were out in the woods or wherever. And they are very impressive. Yeah, that's good.
Good.
And they're not, I mean, but for the most part, they don't want to. And bears too. They don't want to be around people any more than people want to be around bears or mountain lions. They'd rather be doing their own thing.
For anyone who's not heard it, on one of the last two you were on, can you tell the story about when you and your wife saw the black bear?
Sure. We were elk hunting. Yep. And so we were, it was a September hunt, and we were, I was archery elk hunting, and we were in Colorado, and we'd heard a bull bugling. And so I think it was early morning or late evening. I can't remember. I think early morning, but we heard it off in the distance. I'm like, okay. And look at the map right quick. There's a trail we can use to cut through some of the stuff, 'cause we were just going cross country, got down on the trail. And so we're moving real quietly. It's still reasonably dark out. But we're hustling down the trail to try to get up ahead of this bull elk that we can hear out there. And so moving quickly, we're moving into the wind and trying to get up and around and in front. And as we're going down the trail, my wife is ahead of me. She's hustling up the trail. I'm right behind her. And literally, like, right behind me, a couple of feet. There was a bear that had been, I don't know, sleeping or something behind a bush right by the trail. And we're hustling along, and that thing just came shooting out right behind me. Yeah. We had walked past the bear, and it was right by the trail, and it just came just shooting off. Went at about an angle about like that to us, and I was very happy to see the back end of that bear going away from me.
Yeah.
But it came out. I mean, when it jumped out and started running, it was probably 3 or 4 feet from me, and was a nice big adult bear. And it was in, I'll say it was in great shape. It was nice and glossy and just looked beautiful running away from me.
Well, right.
very beautiful running away from me, because I didn't have any kind of, you know, we were bow hunting. So yeah, no gun, no nothing. I had some bear spray, but there would not have been time to use the bear spray. If that bear decided to attack instead of run away, it would have been, I probably would not be sitting here, because it was like, it was right there and it was a big adult bear. So not a cool thing.
300 plus, 350.
Yeah.
In that range.
It looked monstrous.
Right.
The back end of that thing looked like a Mack truck going away from me. But it was big.
The nice thing about black bears is generally they're cowards.
That's correct.
Generally, you can scare them off.
That's correct.
I've told the story before, but I went to college. Well, actually, I didn't go to college. I knew a kid while he was in college who would tell me stories of his golden retriever treeing black bears to the point where they'd have to like grab the dog and bring it inside so the poor black bear could climb down, because right. they wouldn't come down with a golden retriever at the bottom of the tree. Now, I guess it makes sense. It's like almost like a DNA thing, because wolves,
right.
like they want to get away from wolves. But luckily, especially in some of those states like New Jersey, New York, where it's fairly populated right on the edge of where they are, they really do want nothing to do with you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And yes. Yeah, so that's, I mean, I'm super happy that that happened, that my little bear incident happened to me in an area where bears are hunted, because they don't want to have any, especially they don't want to have anything to do with people. I often wonder, like, had that been in a national park, where there's no hunting, and I did that same thing just hiking, which we do all the time, you know, in the dark.
Yep.
And if it had killed something there, and was eating it, you know, it probably would have attacked us.
Yep.
It's not used to being hunted.
It's not afraid of you at
Correct.
All.
Correct. Right. So yeah, you think about things like that every once in a while, especially when you drink too much of this stuff, you start thinking about that.
It is important though to remember, and I believe most of our listeners would agree with us on this. We are on the top of the food chain. Like, nothing should be, we should allow nothing to hunt us. Like, not acceptable. Anything that does hunt us needs to be culled or taught not to do that.
No.
What would you say is allowed to hunt us?
Whatever can. I mean, I think you can argue that, you know, our intelligence should make us the top of the food chain.
So
we can make firearms and we can do this and we can do that. But there is a very special feeling that I enjoy when you're out in the woods and you understand that you may have a gun, you may have a bow, you may have bear spray, you may have all that stuff. But if you happen upon a bear and it decides to protect something that it just killed over there and it attacks you, you might find out that you're not.
Oh.
And I like that feeling. I like that feeling, knowing that there's a chance that I can get hunted back. And then it's like, what's going to happen? I don't mind that.
For sure.
That's not a problem.
You need to understand, anytime you go into any wild environment, that you're stepping out of our comfort zone. However, once a bear or any animal has attacked and killed a human, that needs to be hunted down and eliminated. It's going to do it again.
It's going to happen. I'll say it that way. It's going to happen in today's culture. That's going to happen.
Yep.
Even though, let's say, that bear didn't do anything wrong. It reacted completely as its evolution has told it to.
Yep.
And then we're going to react as evolution has told us, and we're going to gang up on it, and we're going to communicate effectively, and we're going to use our intelligence to handle whatever explosive device, a gun or whatever, that we're going to use, and we're going to take it out.
Yep. Yep.
But I mean, if you want to argue, like, should that happen? You know, I could argue that with you. But, you know, it's not going to happen, so it's irrelevant.
Ethically, you could argue against it.
Yeah.
But from a societal need standpoint, that is what's going to happen. And obviously, I did mean our ability to create tools, our ability to outthink it, is what puts us at the top of the food chain. other than myself, I don't know anyone who could kill a grizzly barehanded.
No.
I mean, I obviously could.
Okay.
But
how much have you, have another
yeah,
one.
Right? No, I'm just
have kidding. Another glass of courage.
And then see how well that goes. Yeah. No, obviously I don't even think that for a second. I'd probably wet myself and lay down. I have always had a fascination with bears since I saw The Edge.
Yes.
Oh, what a
yeah.
absolutely phenomenal movie. Yeah. And it really does do a good job of instilling in you how big and powerful these animals are. And then I watched a movie called The Bear. It was like a kind of a Disney movie back in like the 80s, 90s. And it was, they kept filming this little cub bear and they followed it. And then it, some like huge male kind of took it under its wing, which is not what would happen.
No.
At all.
No.
Not even close. But I mean, it's Disney, so whatever. So yeah, I've been fascinated with bears for a very, very long time. An adult grizzly is probably the scariest thing I can think of on land.
Yeah, I think the, you know, the polar bears, I think, are bigger, faster, stronger. But I mean, we don't see those.
I'm never going to run into it.
Correct. But, yeah. But yeah, outside of that, yeah. And they are amazing. I mean, just seeing those out in the wild is an amazing experience, and it's very humbling.
Are you talking about a polar bear or
a grizzly? A grizzly.
So you've seen them in the wild?
Yes. Yeah.
From how far away?
Probably a couple hundred yards away.
Oh.
300 yards away, maybe. I don't know, something like that. We were up in Glacier National Park, and we were going on one of my favorite hikes in the world that I've done. Haven't done that much in the world, but some places I've been, but that the Grinnell Glacier Trail is just fantastic.
Okay.
And we were going up that trail and there was a mom with a couple of cubs. And we were up above them on the trail. They were down in a meadow below us and there was like this sheer cliff between us. And so I'm telling everybody, oh, I think we're good. You know, we got this sheer cliff. We're good. We can stand here and enjoy the sights and sounds going on. And so we were, and it was amazing because, you know, you can tell a grizzly by the hump that's on their back.
Yep.
That's muscle. That's not just like a bony structure or something. That's muscle because they literally like flip boulders so that their cubs can come in and eat the bugs underneath them. And so she was doing that. She was feeding her cubs. And I mean, rocks that were big.
Yeah.
And she's just like
tossing them
and just throw them aside. And here comes the little guys, eat all the bugs and stuff. And it was fun to watch later on. There was some interaction with some people that bear had. Nothing bad happened other than people getting scared.
Yeah.
But I later on got to watch that same bear with its cubs go up this like sheer ice. I don't know what you even call it. It was just this snow chute, I guess you would call it, that was nearly vertical. And that sow and cubs went straight up that thing without even thinking about it. And I was like, well, maybe we weren't quite so safe. And it's like, oh my God. But yeah, they are. I mean, watching that sow throw those rocks around was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen.
So one of the really surprising things I learned is that, and this might not even be true, one of the surprising things I read on the internet, when a bear is from, I think, 6 months to, or whenever they first come out of the den to like their second year, one of their main sources of protein will be moths.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
I totally agree. Like all those little moths that we get here,
yeah.
I don't know what month it is, but it seems like they're everywhere for a couple of weeks here. Yeah, it's like all those go up in the, or come from the rocks up in the mountains, whichever way they're going. And yeah, the bears eat those. How many moths does it take to feed a grizzly bear? I don't get it.
I mean, a truly ridiculous amount.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, but I've read that as well.
I don't understand it.
Yeah. Are there any left if they're feeding on us?
They must have some good hiding spots is the only thing that makes sense.
Must be. I don't know. But yeah, that's crazy to think about but I mean, it's true. Like bears' primary diet items are bugs and grubs and little stuff that you wouldn't think that they would eat much of.
And kind of thank God.
Yeah.
Kind of, thank God.
Oh, yeah.
They were going after like larger protein sources for their main meals.
Right.
We'd probably be in there a little bit more.
Probably so.
Probably be in there a little bit more.
Probably so.
This is not my theory. And honestly, I just know it from listening to a random Joe Rogan podcast. But do you know of the short face bear?
I know that there is a short face bear. I don't know anything about him.
It's not. It's gone now. Thank God.
Yeah.
They think that the short-faced bear is why it took so long for people to come over from Asia across the Bering Strait, because those short-faced bears lived up in there and they just eat everybody who tried to come through.
I do remember. Now that you say that, I do remember that. And then once that like little barrier, if you want to call it that, was removed, it's like people just like,
yep, we're good now.
Yeah.
Just go.
Now we're going to take over the whole continent.
I believe it was 12 foot tall at the shoulder. So on 4 feet, it was as tall, taller than the ceiling. Yeah. Taller than the ceiling.
Yeah. Talk about a monster.
God, we have it so easy now.
Oh, yeah.
It's unreal.
I don't even want to get started on that, man. Yeah. Yeah. We are incredibly soft.
Yep.
But it's because we're so incredibly smart.
Yeah, that's accurate.
We're lucky. One or the other. I don't know.
It's got to have something to do with intelligence. No, I will complain if the cut of meat I want is not available.
Yeah.
Like, no, I wanted a skirt steak. Where is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
It is absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. I could talk for a long time on that, but I probably better not.
Well, here's the deal. You and I have a tendency to skirt or get right into some fairly controversial subjects,
yes,
which in all honesty, Kurt, I don't think are that controversial.
I agree. They've become controversial for completely idiotic reasons, I think is a way to say that. I think.
Yep. That is the most honest way I've heard that put. One of the things that we got a ton of feedback on one of our previous podcasts was your and my belief that it would not be a bad thing to have some form of
I knew we were going to come back to this
because I think it's what could save the country,
and I don't disagree really with that could. Wholeheartedly, but there's a lot of problems with that. But
there
I swear to God, I knew we were going to come back to this today. I was like, right, how much of this whiskey bottle will disappear before John brings up the voluntary service issue?
Over 40 minutes until I brought that up. Voluntary service.
Thanks for that.
It is such a, and I think we talked about this last time, so I'll just cover it real quickly. If you look at like some countries like Israel, they have mandatory service. Yeah. So sorry, not voluntary, mandatory service. They have some.
I want to back up a second. What are you talking about? People serving their country
for
a period of time, whether they want to or not, as a debt that they owe for the privilege of living in that country.
Exactly. Does not have to be military, does not have to be, doesn't even necessarily have to be physical, though I kind of feel like it should be. Doesn't have to be.
I mean, if you're a person that can't perform physical labor, then you can't perform physical labor.
Obviously. Yeah.
But yeah, 100%. Outside of that,
I feel like it would be better if it was physical. And the thing I keep going back to, and it's what we talked about, I can't think of a single thing that would be better to mix classes up in our country. Rich, poor, middle class, you're all digging the ditch together. I mean, what better way to teach people like, hey, you're no better than anybody else.
We truly are all the same.
Yep. Yep. We are all made from the exact same material.
Yep.
Learn to work along each other.
Yep. Yep. I think that it's a fantastic theory. I think real world application of that theory is the problem. I don't know how to solve that problem. But yeah, if you just think about it, like one of the things that I really like to do is like big picture things, like step back and just really seriously big picture things. It's like, would it be a good thing for all of us, and we're sitting here in America, so let's talk about all Americans. Would it be a good thing for all Americans to be like put together in a big group so that you have to interact with one another and you have to understand the other person, would that be a bad thing? No, it would be a great thing. Because right now, you know, we tend to be isolated into various groups for various reasons, voluntarily and involuntarily. Yep. And would it be a great thing for everybody to have interaction with one another on a personal level, not over the internet, not where you're sitting there behind, you know, your phone, not behind any of that kind of stuff, but just face to face like you and I are doing here right now.
Yep.
And just sit there and talk to folks.
Yep.
It would, I believe, solve a lot of the problems. If you stand back and look at it in the big picture and just look at it in that respect, how you implement that, I have no idea. That's the problem. Far above my pay grade. Yep. That I have no idea how to even start.
It would give you a nosebleed to try to get up there. So one of the things I've been trying to do, and I do nothing on Facebook, Twitter. The only social media that I use personally, not from a Walton standpoint, but personally, is Instagram. And I like it a little bit better because it's usually just like happy pictures and like whatever. And that's what I like. And I follow a bunch of dog accounts. We actually did.
Dog account? I don't do any of it. So I don't even know what you're talking
we
about.
We did a, I mean, it's just an account that's about a dog. We actually try to get people to donate to one of my friends who's up in Canada who has a similar dog to Brutus, same thing, but had started limping one day. They took him to the vet 2 days later. 3 days after that, they cut off his entire leg. Yeah. And then beyond that, they didn't get to it in time. So he's going through chemo. So we were trying to like drum up some support for whatever. I believe people actually helped because she did send me a message saying that there was an increase in donations at that point. But anyways, I like Instagram better because, you know, it's whatever. It's pictures, it's happy, fun time, but I have started making sure that anything I post as a comment, anything like that, that I would be perfectly comfortable and happy saying that to that person's face.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Am I actually okay with speaking this to a person while they're looking at me? And if not, delete. I'll just not do it. Like, that's not, I don't have a right to comment on something if I'm not willing. And it's not even so much the threat of getting into a confrontation. It's, to me at least, it's more the danger of seeing pain in that person's eye.
Yep.
Like, I don't want to say anything to hurt anybody. It's not, I don't think it's how anyone is designed, at least.
Right.
But
well, there's some wackos.
Sure. Absolutely. But. There's a small percentage of the population who's mentally divergent from the rest of us. But it makes me sad is the wrong word. Confused is probably more the word. How we got to where we are right now with how we're using the internet. It could have been this unbelievable force for good. My friend needed people to donate to help her sweetest in the world dog. Actually, he growls at people all the time, but whatever. This gorgeous dog. Instead, we make little mean comments under happy pictures that we post to each other.
Yep. I don't know. Maybe we're had enough whiskey.
Probably and we should probably. Yes,
probably too far. But anyway,
Patrick, the title of this should be Whiskey, Bears, and Philosophy.
Oh, let's get philosophy. Let's do philosophy. That's been my sort of COVID project. I've been reading philosophy stuff.
Ooh.
Which I think I was telling Austin this earlier before, like in my younger days, I would have rather shot myself in the head than read a philosophy book. And now for whatever reason, it's like I've been reading a lot of philosophy and like doing some deep thinking kind of exercises and things like that. And it is fun at this point.
It's also very important.
I'm also retired, by the way, so I don't have to worry about all of that. So that
kind
helps.
Of retired.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. It's okay, we'll go with that.
I mean, it's kind of the thought process and the study behind being human. It's why are people like this? Why do people act this way? Why do I act this way? And should I? So it is an incredibly fascinating. Is it right to call it a study? I don't even know if it's right to call it a study.
I don't know. You were talking about how you go through the process of before you hit send, mm-hmm. like, would this make someone, could I look in someone's eyes and say this? And it's funny, my wife and I were just talking about that because I've now got her reading some philosophy stuff. And one of the things that we've like really learned and we're trying really hard to apply, it's very difficult to do, is this process. She just a couple of days ago found a book that put it in pretty good, easy to remember perspective. And it's like when somebody says something that really affects you, like you get a you feel a response and you mm-hmm. want to respond to that. And what you should remember is PQR, pause and question your response.
Okay.
And that's what you were doing when you say, would that make this person angry?
Right.
You paused, you questioned your response. And then if it was okay to send it or not, you made the appropriate decision and did that. And so that's kind of we've been talking a lot about that and deciding how you're going to respond to whatever it is that happens. You know, if somebody's trying to offend you, you don't have to be offended at all. You can decide to be offended or not.
Yep.
And that's kind of the philosophical thing that we've been talking about at our house. Man, learning. COVID was weird.
Yeah.
but that's what we've been talking about is how you should, you know, we decide how we should react to things.
Oh, yeah. You are responsible Absolutely. For your emotions.
Yeah.
This person said this thing to me, so I got angry. That's not their fault. That's your fault. Yep. You need to be
yep.
emotionally intelligent enough to say, okay, well, that's how they they feel. I'm going to move on with my life. Yep. I say that very confidently as a 40-year-old. As a 30-year-old, I may have done that. As a 20-year-old, nope.
Not even close. Nowhere.
It's the process of getting older. It's the process of experience. Like I see young kids today and I don't look at them as idiots when they're doing things I think are idiots. And I look at them as younger me. I'm like, yep, that's how I would have done that. Stupid. Yep. Shouldn't do it. But that's what I would have done. So yep. What are you going to do?
Yep. Yep, for sure. Another way that I like to look at that stuff, remember the Pavlov's dog thing, you know, that mm-hmm. ring the bell, feed it, and then pretty soon you ring the bell and the dog starts to salivate. And it's a conditioned response thing, I think is what they talked about. Well, one of the books that I really, really enjoyed reading was the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
Yep.
Love that book. And in there, he talks about how talk about Pavlov's the stimulus and response. Well, when you talk about stimulus response, there's a space in between those two words, and that's where you get to decide what there's stimulus to you, and then there's a space, and then there's the response. And as humans, we're not dogs; we can have a response that we decide, and that's what he was talking about in that kind of stuff. So. That's what you were doing. That's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, that is profound.
That's what you were doing.
It's that space between.
Space right in between there that we get to decide if somebody's trying to offend us in whatever way, in whatever setting, whatever you want to do, all that is what that person does. And you can walk away and not be offended because you've got that space right there between the stimulus and the response, and you can walk away and not even have a response.
So that's an amazing thing. That is very, very profound. And on a personal level, I feel like people need to hear that. Like, hey, you have that space. Just if you wrote it out in a sentence, there would be a space between those two words.
Correct.
Take that and do what you want with it. However, I do feel like some not good people have gained that space. They've figured out that I can block them from having that time in between the two things. No. Okay.
No, I don't believe that. I believe nobody, and it's so easy to say and so hard to put into practice, but I believe that it's a stimulus, whatever it is, there's the stimulus and there's a response, and people can try to take up that space if they want to. And again, that's my choice if I let them do that, because that's me that stimulus is applied to, and that's my space. And if I don't let anybody in there, it's still my space. And I don't care who they are or what they say, it doesn't matter. And like I said, man, that is so, it's like easy to say all of that. And it's just really, really hard to apply it.
Sure, because what you're talking about is personal responsibility.
Yep.
I am responsible for not letting that infect my worldview. Incredibly hard. Incredibly hard to do. I mean, if you can ever master it, unbelievably beneficial, but something you're going to spend a long time trying to get down right.
Yep. And then it takes stuff like this to sit around and talk about all this kind of boring crap.
So what is it? In vitus veritas, right? In wine.
Vino truth. Veritas.
Yeah, in vito.
Vino veritas.
I think we have to change that.
Yeah.
To in Elijah.
In, yeah. Veritas. In the Harlequin Elijah.
Harlequin. In the Harlequin scripts. All right, Kurt, is there anything else you want to bring up?
Oh, man. All right. I'm going to bring up some more. Well, we'll shut down for now.
We'll keep this around.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Remember to like, comment, and subscribe. If you're listening on Stitcher, Premium, anything like that. Premium? Spotify? Whatever premium is also.
Brought to you by Elijah Craig, Barrel Proof Whiskey.
Leave a review. If you've listened to this one all the way through, it's got to be excellent. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for checking out the Meatgistics podcast. To shop everything but the meat, head on over to waltonsinc.com. And to get your meat processing questions answered by experts and enthusiasts alike, head on over to our online community at meatgistics.com. Waltons, everything but the meat.